Penguin Random House Audio presents Life on Delay, Making Peace with a Stutter by John Hendrickson. Read for you by George Newbern. For Liz. The impediment to action advances action. What stands in the way becomes the way. Marcus Aurelius. After tonight, if you don't want this to be a secret out of the past, I will resurrect it. I'll have a good go at it. Songs, Ohia, Farewell Transmission. Author's note. This book is based on dozens of interviews conducted over a 2-year period. These discussions took place in person, over the phone, and across various audio-video platforms. All quotes have been edited for length and clarity. Many of these conversations concern memory. I've made a sincere effort to corroborate the events described in these stories through supplementary interviews, photographs, videos, emails, journal entries, newspaper clippings, and other forms of archival material, both on my own and with the help of a third-party fact-checker. While a large amount of the dialogue that appears in this text was recorded and transcribed, some of the quotes, namely pieces of dialogue from many years or decades ago, were reconstructed from my or other individual's memory, which, by its very nature, is imperfect. I have done my best to write this book accurately and with empathy. 1. Nothing in your hands. You know, you don't have to do this, Jeff says. His voice has a fatherly tone. You and I could get out of here. We could go get breakfast. He's kidding, but not really. If I say yes, Jeff will say okay, and we'll ride the elevator down to the lobby and not speak of it again. It will just be one of those days, another morning when I vanish rather than talk. He leans against the makeup counter with his back to the mirror. My face is caked in concealer, but I can still see my acne scars, the dark circles under my eyes, my imperfect shave. I look scared, like a little boy getting a haircut who shrinks into the swivel chair as the clippers buzz toward his ears. Jeff is my boss. I can tell he's concerned. I want to take him up on his offer. I want to stand and leave and forget about all of this. Eventually, he says goodbye and good luck and pats my shoulder on his way out the door. I walk over to the little room where I'm supposed to wait. When I was young, my life was defined by little rooms. There was the speech therapist's office with the mysterious wall-length mirror. There was the windowless room in the basement of my elementary school. Everyone in class knew I went to the little room, but nobody wanted to bring it up. I never brought it up either, because maybe if I ignored the problem hard enough, it would disappear. That's what we were all hoping for, me, my mom, my dad, my brother. We've spent decades waiting for this strange thing to exit my body and drift away. For dozens of reasons, it has stuck around. I've avoided almost anything resembling public speaking my entire life, but now I'm here, sweating through my shirt as the minutes tick by before they call me onto the set. My knee is bouncing uncontrollably. I'm staring at the floor, sipping a lukewarm black coffee that I struggled to order at Dunkin' Donuts earlier this morning. The cashier flashed me a familiar pity smile. I stayed late at my office last night, sitting across the table from Helen, a public relations person at my company. We entered a little room on the 6th floor, and she turned on a fake newscaster voice to lead me in a mock interview. I couldn't get through one answer. She kept pushing me forward. Let's run through it again, she said. Okay, try again. Again? I couldn't start sentences. I'd break eye contact. I'd fiddle with a pen as a distraction to help me get to the next word. I wanted to leave, but she stayed, so I stayed. We began again, and I reached for the pen. Helen, with sweetness and sadness and grace, said, "Let's try one with nothing in your hands." The reason I'm in this little room today, MSNBC's Midtown Manhattan Green Room, is because 24 hours ago, my life changed. I had spent nearly 30 years hiding from one word, the S word. You've already figured out the word. I've spent paragraphs avoiding the act of typing it. When you're young, you internalize that stutter is an ugly word. Everything about stutter is weird. Those three T's, that in the middle that makes you think of dumb. Stutter lands with a thud, like gimp or retard. Your instinct is to run from stutter, to move the conversation away from stutter. Stutter is painful and awkward and something nobody wants to talk about. Today is Friday, November 22nd, 2019. I'm here because yesterday I published an article in The Atlantic about the man who has become the most famous living stutterer, and I'm about to do something I've never considered doing. Talk on TV. Just under 12 months from now, Joe Biden will be elected president of the United States. He somehow made it this far without tens of millions of people realizing not only that he stuttered as a young boy, but that he still stutters as an old man. There are dozens of writers at my publication who are more talented than me, more deserving than me, more qualified than me to interview the next president. I landed the assignment for the sole reason that I stutter too. You'd like to think that when these moments arise, you stride toward them, chin up, chest out, triumphant horns blaring somewhere in the background. Right now, I'm just scared. In 90 seconds, I walk onto the set in a blue blazer with a transparent earpiece and a battery clipped to the back of my belt. I'll try to play the part of a person who's supposed to be there. But the moment I begin to speak, I know I'll make people uncomfortable. I have no idea how difficult these next 15 minutes will be. And I have no idea what's waiting for me after that. 2. Dead air. Nearly every decision in my life has been shaped by my struggle to speak. I've slinked away to the men's room rather than say my name during introductions. I've stayed home to eat silently in front of the TV rather than order off the menu at a Chinese restaurant. I've let the house phone and my cell phone and my work phone ring and ring and ring rather than pick up to say hello. I can never get through the H. It's the same sound you need to summon when your teacher takes attendance at the start of each school day. I've dreaded the confirmation of my presence in a physical space. Ear. Because I know the black hole of the H will swallow the ear. I understand that my stutter may make you cringe, laugh, recoil. I know my stutter can feel like a waste of time, of yours, of mine, and that it has the power to embarrass both of us. And I've begun to realize that the only way to understand its power is to talk about it. Since that morning I first stuttered on television, I've had profound conversations with stutterers from all over the world. I wanted to know how other people deal with it. Most of the time I just sat and listened. But I inevitably asked a version of the same question. How do you make peace with the shame of stuttering? What do you do with all the anger, the resentment, the fear? How do you accept an aspect of yourself that you're taught at such an early age to hate? I've also had some unexpected conversations with ghosts from my past. Now, I'm trying to answer a few of the questions I've been asking others. I'm staring at a message from a stranger named Elizabeth. Hi, although we haven't met, I almost delete it, but I keep reading. Elizabeth says she has just returned from Maine, where she happened to visit her son's kindergarten teacher, who at one point spoke glowingly about an article she'd read, written by a former student. After a couple of back and forths, I suddenly have my kindergarten teacher's email address. Soon I'll have her phone number. We make plans to talk, but now I'm too embarrassed to dial. Why am I doing this? Why would she remember anything about me?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?